This is a Fan 590 podcast. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Greetings, one and all, and welcome to Primetime Sports for Monday, July 12, 2010. Yours truly, Jeff Blair, sitting in for Bob McCowan, who will be back next week. Joined by my co-host, James Deacon, to my left.
All right. Thanks, to.
Yeah, right there.
You're always right.
Well, I don't know about that. Later on, we will be joined by Kevin McCabe of Fox Sportsnet to talk about an imminent basketball trade involving the Toronto Raptors and the Phoenix Suns, the upshot of which will see Hedo Turkoglu and Jose Calderon leave your Toronto Raptors and Tyson Chandler, at least this is the reported deal, Tyson Chandler, Boris Diaw, and Leandro Barbosa coming back to the Raptors. We'll be on with Rob Becker, our legal analyst, to talk about a variety of issues. But first, this is the All-Star break, the Home Run Derbies tonight. And we're very pleased to be joined at this time by Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Mr. Anthopoulos, thank you for being with us.
Glad to be on, guys.
Alex, is it sort of like, is this kind of like a trade fair for general managers in mid-season to be around all of your colleagues, not to mention all the best players in the game?
Well, you know what, actually, I know years ago, I guess, you know, a lot of GMs would convene at the All-Star game, and, you know, since I've been in the front office, we haven't done that, and I think not too many GMs do go out to the All-Star game. I'm actually not out there now.
No.
But I will say that it seemed like this past week, more so than ever, seemed like there's been a lot more dialogue amongst clubs. We were pretty active with respect to phone calls, things like that. It just seems like everyone's maybe starting to get the itch and starting to gather information. So we spent the bulk of the week here, some of our scouts, front office staff, we have a what we call a little war room in our offices with all the, you know, the teams and prospects, mm-hmm. things like that, and had a lot of interesting dialogue, and hopefully it'll continue to heat up as we get closer to July 31st.
But is this earlier than you would normally have that happen?
It, from my standpoint, it's my first year in this position. I mean, obviously with J.P. Ricciardi, I was still involved.
But yeah.
Fielding calls and being the one to make the calls to general managers, it seems to be a little more active with respect to dialogue than I remember in the past. I mean, I think part of it as well is I'm one that I like to call a lot. I like to just try to stay in the loop and get as creative as I can. And then the more information I get from the other 29 clubs, a brainstorm or an idea may come up where we can work on a three-way or a four-way trade. So it, from my standpoint, it definitely seems like there's potentially more fits out there in 2010 than there have been in the past.
And I guess, too, Alex, the fact that Cliff Lee has already been moved, it's not unusual to see a pitcher moved ahead of the deadline. I mean, I think of Bartolo Colon being traded from the Cleveland Indians to the Expos. But it does seem as if that indicates that teams are really going to be maybe even more aggressive this year, aren't they?
Yeah, I would think so. And I think with respect to Cliff Lee, I'm not really surprised by the fact that he was moved a little bit earlier. And the reason I say that is, obviously, like I said, I try to keep in touch with teams. And even with respect to the Cliff Lee deal, I still, you know, if there was a way for me to get involved and there was three ways or four ways, I was open to doing that. And just in conversations I had with Jack Zarenzik, the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, he was with the Brewers when they acquired CC Sabathia. And I think one of the big components just in talking to Jack was they paid a little bit more with the Brewers for Sabathia because they felt they could get him for four or five starts earlier. And I know Jack's thought process was if he can move him a little bit earlier, he may get more back with respect to value because someone would have him for an extra four or five starts more. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think that was the first domino to fall. And I think everyone's a little bit more active now, and hopefully we'll be able to see some trades in the next two or three weeks.
We're on with Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. I had an acquaintance ask me today, just in passing, whether I thought the Blue Jays would be, quote-unquote, a buyer or a seller. And I said, well, I think they'll be a seller, but I put an asterisk beside it. I've got to think that you have some pretty... Yeah, you've got some attractive players to other teams, but at the same time, you've really got to make sure that this year, more than ever, it seems, you've got to make sure that what you get in return is something that fits into a long-term plan.
There's no doubt about it. I know a lot's been written and a lot's been speculated about a lot of our players. And, look, just to be completely honest, you know, players are not immune to the internet. They have it in the clubhouse. They all look at MLBTradeRumors.com and things like that. And they're fans. And it's one of those things that, you know, from our standpoint with respect to trades, I'll never get into specifics with respect to players. But I'm open. I'll talk about anybody. There's no question that certain players will be harder to pry than others for obvious reasons, whether it's quality of the player, the control of the player, financial implications, things like that. But I think anything that we do, of course, you're balancing short-term and long-term. But, no, we won't make trades for the sake of making trades, even if guys are free agents. We still want to have as good a team as we can. And I think anything that we do, it'll be very clear that it's designed to continue to impact this club for the long term and continue to build a winning team that could be competitive year in and year out.
Very quick question, and I don't think this has been talked about a lot, but with the type of year Jose Bautista is having, you know, the way things shake out, you might end up having an opening for a third baseman next year, operating under the assumption Wallace is here. Is there any thought of starting negotiations on a contract with Jose right now, or is that something you'd rather wait and see how the rest of the year plays out?
It's certainly a fair point to bring up, and Jose's had a great year. And with respect to contract negotiations and maybe what our thoughts and plans are, it's not something that I would comment on. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, we try to keep things below the radar and, you know, beneath the vest. And, it's one of those things, if we're ever talking about a contract with the player, when those things get out or when they leak, all of a sudden it starts to confuse the process. People start to write about it. Players are reading about it. The agents are reading about it. You know, there's other people in our ear and some other people's ears, and I think it can convolute the process a little bit. And that's why when we do have dialogue with respect to contract extensions or things like that, we try to keep them as quiet as we can. I don't think anyone knew we were even talking to Adam Wind about a contract, and that took at least a month to get it done, and I think it allowed the process to move forward. So, well, with respect to Jose Bautista, he's an all-star. He had a tremendous season. He's a very good player. I know, but in terms of what our plans may or may not be, that's probably something that we would rather keep in-house.
But is he, oh, I respect that, and certainly fair play to you for that, but is he the type of guy, let me put it to you this way, does he fit into your long-term vision? Is there a way he could fit into it?
Sure, I think he certainly can. He's 29 years old. He's a tremendous athlete, takes very good care of himself. You know, he's a Latin player, but one that's very well educated, speaks English very well. You know, he's able to mix in with all the players in the clubhouse, and I think in a lot of ways he's a bit of a unifying force in that respect. And then you look at his defensive versatility as well, and I know the batting average is low, but you look at those walk totals, he might walk 100 times just this season, and he really seems to be becoming a late bloomer, and there was a significant mechanical change with him. And Jose's a very talented player. And the other thing, even if you look at him as a right fielder, it's getting harder and harder, in my opinion, to find pure right fielders, guys that can legitimately throw from right field. There's a lot of guys that are more left fielders that we put in right, but to find those unique individual right fielders that can truly throw and play the position and also profile from an offensive standpoint with power, they're hard to find, and I think Jose certainly qualifies as that.
Alex, this was not a year that you came into with a ton of expectations, and one of them sure wasn't sending three guys to the All-Star game. Is John Buck the happiest surprise of the season for you, or who, if not, who is?
Well, God, I mean, it's you know, you're always thrilled for all of them, and you know, the more, you know, obviously I get to travel with these guys and I'm around them in spring training, and you get to know them as human beings and as people, and I'm thrilled for John Buck because of what type of guy he is. And you know, no one really talks about this, but talking to our coaches and staff and even some of the players, John Buck in his own way is becoming a leader of this team. He cares so much about winning. He's someone that's not afraid to get in someone's face. He is about winning, about playing hard, about being competitive. I think he's someone that was in a tough spot with the Kansas City Royals the last few years where they had two very talented guys in Miguel Olivo, who's also going to the All-Star game, I believe, and him were splitting time and sharing time. And I think Cito Gaston and Dwayne Murphy have done a great job with him from an offensive standpoint. But we felt that it was in there for him. I mean, he had 8 home runs and about 170 at-bats last year. The power's always been there with him. The on-base was going to be low. The batting average is higher than we thought it was going to be. We thought we can get similar production to Rod Barajas, but we're certainly thrilled for him and certainly well deserving with everything he's done for this team.
The thing you bring up there has a lot to do with the person, not just the stats. Now, you guys, it's baseball. Stats rule, and you've got sheets and sheets and sheets. But how much does character factor into the way that you look at the suitability of these players?
Very important, and it's one that I balance all the time. I remember when we were looking at some of these free agents, even when we were looking at John Buck and some of the other free agents, we were, you know, there were some other players out there that maybe were a little bit more talented, and then the more work that we did on their background, how they prepare for a game, how they throw, how they game plan in terms of young starters like throwing to them or don't like throwing to them, the influence they have on the clubhouse. Again, those aren't tangible things that you're going to see in the stat sheet, but I'm a firm believer that players can make other players improve and a lot better. Coaches can only do so much, and I think I've seen players have impact on other players. And with every player we do acquire, we always try to have two components. One is just from an ability standpoint, what do they bring to the table offensively, defensively, when they pitch, things like that. And then the second component is what's the added bonus? What other element do they bring? Is it a clubhouse presence? Is it some other component that they can help some other player? And it's important. That being said, talent rules the day, and there are going to be times where we may have to take a little bit of a gamble on someone whose character there may be a few warts, because it's, you know, you still need talent to play this game, and that's a fine balancing act. And I was just talking to our clubhouse manager about it the other day in his past experiences. It's a fine line, and it's not an exact science, and one that I continue to balance and continue to talk to our staff about.
Ron, with Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Alex, I guess a lot of the focus in Toronto in the second half will be on Brett Wallace, when we may see him. I think Travis Snyder also as well. What are your plans right now? And we understand the plans can change, but as you sit right now on July 12th, what would your plans be for Travis Snyder and Brett Wallace?
Travis Snyder is doing very well. He's continuing his rehab in New Hampshire. I think the thought right now is maybe get him a few more games there, and hopefully he should be back, I would say, either during the weekend or after the weekend, but it's getting very, very close. Brett Wallace continues to have a very good season, and we're very excited about how far he's come from a defensive standpoint. When we called up Mark Zipchinski about a week ago, I went over to him and I asked him how Wallace looked from a defensive standpoint. Everyone knows that he could swing the bat, but he said, wow, he's really come a long way. He's starting to dive for balls to his left, to his right, making some significant plays. But with respect to Brett, you know, he flew through the minor leagues last year. This is his second full season in professional baseball. And you know, he's young, he's 23 years old. Lyle Overbay's playing very well. I know the aggregate stats don't look great, but if you look at what he did in the middle of June and now coming into July, he's really starting to swing the bat well, and you know, I think Lyle deserves to continue to get a chance to play. So it's one of those things that the game plan, as we sit here today, and like you said, that plans can change, that Brett will be down there for the duration of the minor league year. But again, things can always change. Someone can get hurt, an opportunity can present itself, but we are very pleased with the way he's doing.
Alex, have you seen anything encouraging from Adam Lind and from Aaron Hill?
I think at times, and I think probably a lot of the fans would say the same thing. There's certain games where they look locked in and they're swinging the bat well. You know, I think, you know, there was a game, I think it was Saturday, Adam Lind hit the home run. He had a hard hit ball to center field. One was a line drive that was caught. And those are the type of things that you look for and you hope he can get on a hot streak. And obviously hit the home run in the left field as well. So, you know, obviously Aaron Hill the same way. There have been spurts where he's gotten a few hits here and there. They just haven't been able to string together that performance for weeks at a time. So, again, you know, it's one of those things that both of these kids are very talented. They're very good players. They're going to continue to be good players. They're obviously in a season-long funk right now, at least for the first half. You know, we don't know when it's going to end. I know that it will end. I just don't know when. And I think they both realize that as well. And the biggest key for them is that they continue to work hard, continue to keep their head up and realize that it will turn for them.
Alex, I don't think too many people thought that your team would have the record it has right now. I mean, I'm going to plead guilty in that. I do believe at one point I was suggesting, well, I think I thought 500. Well, let's be honest. I think I was suggesting something like 95 losses or something like that, but that's
sure.
That's neither here nor there. But I mean, seriously, you have to think that the first half went a little better than what a lot of people thought it would go. And I guess my question is, the pitching was so good in the first half. I mean, you can make a case that going into the last 2 weeks, the starting rotations, the numbers were actually a little better than when the rotation had Roy Halladay. Were you concerned, though, with what we saw from Ricky Romero in the last two starts? I mean, Sean Markham is hurt. He's expected back. But the last two starts, Romero's stuff just seemed to be, it was almost like it was almost like a different guy. Is there something there, or is it just a matter of you know, a mechanical flaw or something he needs to work on?
Well, I think in fairness to Romero, just like you said, he was so good in the first half. You know, prior to those last two starts, I mean, he lost a tough game in Cleveland where I think he only gave up a run. But really, he went into that start in New York with an ERA below 3. I think it was 2.83. I mean, you look at doing that over 3 months of the season in the American League East, being up there in innings pitched, being up there with strikeouts. And what happens is he's pitched so well and does have tremendous stuff. And I'm not even close to compare him to Roy Halladay, but it does remind me in a sense that when the expectations get built up and people think so highly of you, and they see how impressive and the ability that you do have, when you do scuffle for two or three starts, which all starters will do. And I remember many times over the years, Roy Halladay would have a two or three or four start stretch where he'd get hit a little bit, and everyone would start to say, wow, what's wrong with Roy Halladay? Is he getting older? Is it a mechanical thing? You know, unfortunately, it's one of those things that it's practically impossible to go through a season and have 34 quality starts and continue to maintain that high level of performance. Certainly, I think Romero would be the first one to tell you he's not pleased with the way he pitched. But I expect him to bounce back. But I do expect this part of his development where he will have a stretch here and there where he will get hit and the ERA will jump up and down. But for the long term, stuff-wise, it's still there. He just needs to continue to work on his command and work on being consistent every single time out. But we've been thrilled with the way that he's pitched.
What are you doing for the break? Just relaxing for a couple of days?
Not really. Today I had some, we just moved into a new house. My wife's been doing pretty much all of the work, but I've been on the phone a lot today with teams and trying to get some things done and be back in the office tomorrow. Today was a bit of a light day for me, but we'll be back in the office tomorrow and continue to try to put some things together for July 31st and continue to try to find ways to improve this club.
Alex, we appreciate your time as always. Thank you very much and enjoy whatever break you get.
All right, guys, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. That's Alex Anthopoulos, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. When we come back, we'll be joined by Rob Becker, our legal analyst. This is Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius Channel 97.
We're back with more Primetime Sports. That little teeny tiny bridge between...
That you don't like.
That I don't like, which is why I have a co-host. Yeah. 44-45, right? Are you surprised at the Jays record?
Yeah, I would have been surprised at the record anyway, but I'm especially surprised that they've achieved it without their two best bats. With Adam Lynn and Aaron Hill not hitting the way they normally have, that hurts. So they're doing really well.
When we come back, Rob Becker, this is Primetime Sports.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
This is Primetime Sports for Monday, July 12th. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. Joined by my co-host, James Deacon.
Still here.
Doing a fine job, too, I might add.
I think you might want a second opinion on that.
Hmm. Later on, we will be joined by Kevin McCabe of Fox Sportsnet to talk about the Phoenix Suns and the players that the Toronto Raptors are reportedly getting from the Phoenix Suns. But first, we are joined by our legal analyst, our legal beagle, Rob Becker. Mr. Becker.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little overheated here in New York, but other than that, it's good.
Yeah, you'd find it the same here, Rob.
Okay. Yes. I guess that makes me feel better. I'm not sure.
Yeah, without the good subway system, though.
Yeah. At least you got the air conditioning when you walk between buildings underground. That's nice.
That is true. That is true. Well, now, Mr. Becker, I wanted to ask you about Nolan Ryan's lawsuit. And I guess just to give people a bit of a background, Nolan Ryan and Chuck Greenberg, who the latter of whom is a Pittsburgh-based sports attorney, have essentially accused the Texas Rangers of breaching their purchase agreement with the group And essentially, they're suing the court-appointed restructuring officer, or they're accusing the court-appointed restructuring officer of trying to, quote, hijack the bankruptcy case by recommending that the team reopen negotiations with other bidders. The Rangers are in bankruptcy, and Baseball Express, which is Nolan Ryan and Greenberg, appeared to think that they were in the process of buying the team. And, you know, Nolan Ryan's one of these people that I think most people associate Nolan Ryan with the fastball. He's clearly sort of that old Texas boy who's probably not going to take too kindly to a bunch of lawyers derailing his dream of owning a baseball team.
So he hired a lawyer.
which everybody does. I mean, is this just, is this a little bit of posturing here? I mean, ultimately, it seems as if the Greenberg-Ryan group, that's who baseball wants to own the team, and we all know that generally, you know, they get their way when it comes to this. Is this posturing, or kind of walk us through this? Because this just kind of, I think a lot of people just assumed that Nolan Ryan was going to be the owner of the Rangers.
Well, and it's part of the reason why they even went into bankruptcy was to ease that process. So that's why he's kind of horrified to find that sort of the monster he created or helped create could now go against him and cause the team to end up in other hands. Now, having said that, this court-appointed guy has also said that Ryan has the best bid, but I think that he feels obligated. You know, when you're appointed by a court in a bankruptcy situation, you're trying to maximize all the money that comes in to pay off, you know, all the money that's owed. And so, if you're in that position, you're going to feel, well, I got to look for at least see if there's other better offers out there. And obviously, Ryan doesn't like that, but it may be that, you know, this guy's not going to find any other better offers. But it doesn't strike me as so odd that that's what this person would do if you're in this bankruptcy situation and you got to take care of everybody who's owed money.
Yeah, but Rob, a layperson would look at this and wonder, when is a deadline not a deadline? You know, this process has gone through. There was a deadline for submissions and people making bids, and mm-hmm. and I guess the Ryan group felt that deadline had come and gone. Is it legal for them to do this, just to open it up because they don't think they've got to squeeze the last dollar out of this?
Well, a lot of the normal rules will not apply in bankruptcy. A lot of the normal contractual rules will sort of be suspended in a bankruptcy situation, and that's part of the reason why people go into bankruptcy, really. So, I find it hard to believe that the court-appointed restructuring officer would just totally do something that's outside of his power. I mean, that's what Ryan's saying, is saying this guy's acting outside of his power, but that strikes me as an unlikely thing for someone in this position to do. So I guess what I'm saying is, on the one hand, that I tend to think that Ryan's suit is not all that strong, but on the other hand, nevertheless, he may end up with the team because he may have the best bids. So he's just, I think he's sort of being what you were saying before. He's sort of like the tough guy Texan who doesn't want anyone to mess with him. So he's, you know, he files the lawsuit to say, don't even think about selling it to somebody else. And I don't know that, you know, he's the type of guy that before filing such a suit is really going to care all that much about, you know, all the legal niceties of how strong his case is. In other words, part of the reason for filing the suit is not just to win it, but rather just to file it and, you know, throw a monkey wrench in everything.
Speaking of legal niceties, the NHL's legal costs climbed 48.6% during 2008-2009, according to a recent tax filing, which showed their legal fees climbed $3.94 million that season. The NHL would not comment on the filing. I mean, this has got to deal with the bankruptcy trial over the Coyotes. Yep. And also, I believe there was a lawsuit with Madison Square Garden over digital rights as well.
I think it's less so the Madison Square Garden one. I think this is mostly about the Coyotes. If you remember when that case was going hot and heavy, the number of papers filed was unbelievable. I mean, the speed with which the two sides were filing really substantive papers was unbelievable, and so there was no doubt in my mind that they were incurring these huge attorney's fees, and I think that explains it. And I also think it means that next year's attorney's fees, you know, will probably go back to what they were 2 years ago, that this was a sort of, you know, this was an anomaly, a jump in the graph, and I think it'll return to normal soon. But, boy, that was a lot of money to be spending on keeping a team in not Phoenix, but Glendale, which in the end may not be there very long. I don't know what the point of all this was in the end.
Rob, speaking of people who need attorneys, Michael Vick is back in the news. How does this, I gather now there's this party and somebody, he's not allowed to be in among convicted felons and, you know, the kinds of guys that somebody got shot. This is the NFL. So, I mean, it's kind of another day in the NFL, but what does this do to him?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be all that bad because, look, can they really show that Michael had reason to believe there's going to be guns and thugs there? I mean, first of all, the guy who got shot, Quanis Phillips, who was a former associate of Vic in the dogfighting ring, some of the reports say he wasn't even supposed to be there. He crashed the party. So, you know, it's hard to say that Michael Vick, after all, was the person celebrating the birthday. He wasn't even the host, though. He wasn't the organizer. It was his brother.
Although, you can be sure he paid the bill.
Well, yeah, right, but I'm just saying he didn't necessarily have any reason to know thugs would be there or guns or drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I suppose you can come
who else does he know?
A cynic would say, well, in this sort of culture, there's a lot of guns and drugs, but that, I don't think that's enough to say that's Michael Vick's fault. I mean, I think that they really show that he had reason to believe he was going to be associating with such people, and that might not be so easy.
Rob.
Yes.
The Decream models were there. Now, I don't know a lot about that. I don't know a lot about, I don't know a lot about, you know, the NFL culture, but, you know, if
I don't sound like linemen.
If I've got a friend who says, we're having this little 300 person get together down at this Mexican restaurant, and oh, yeah, the Decream models are coming.
Yes.
With my background, you know, at some point, is Michael Vick just stupid? Stupid?
I thought the rule was no thugs and no drugs and no guns. I mean, these are just, you know, these are women. I don't think the rule was that he's not allowed to have pretty women at the party. So
If they're called the Cream models, you've got to think there might be some thuggery associated with it.
I don't. Maybe it's just a reference to the cream of the crop.
Apparently that's it. But it's the spelling, though, you know, Rob. It's not.
Well, it's spelled the C-R-E-M-E. I don't know I don't know what files from that. You're more of a linguist than I.
They would certainly be rough confections.
Oh God!
I think we're getting outside of our own sort of knowledge.
Yes,
area.
We are. We don't travel in those circles.
No.
But in all seriousness, you know, look. I mean, the NFL. We keep talking about it's got an image issue, and it's got such an image issue that people continue to go to games and continue to drive the ratings and all that. Does this do all these guys acting badly? Does it matter to anybody but us?
Well, it certainly seems to matter to Goodell. And if it matters to Goodell, it's probably because it does matter to more than just us, and it matters to sponsors, and it matters to, you know, he's worried that people are going to be less interested in the league, and what he cares about is the bottom line. So it must be, I mean, if it was just journalists or it was just people talking on radio, if we were the only people who cared, Goodell wouldn't care. You know, he doesn't care what you think or what I think, but if it affects his bottom line, yeah, he cares.
Okay, now, and this is just so our listeners understand what happened. This is a newspaper called the Daily Press, quoting a couple of party guests anonymously, that the incident began when Kajana Frank, Vic's longtime fiancé, was feeding a piece of double chocolate birthday cake to Vic. Now, this guy Phillips, who betrayed Vic and became a critical witness against him in the dogfighting case, apparently interrupted the touching cake ceremony, smashing the cake into Vic's face.
Yes, but it might have been accidental, they say.
But now, here's the thing. Some say Marcus Vick invited Phillips.
Yes.
So, you're honestly going to tell me that Vick didn't think that this, like, why would his brother bring him? I got a surprise for you, Mike. You know, the guy that got you in jail? He's here for your birthday. Well, this tries the whole common sense. I mean,
I know it does, but it's just hard to figure out these interrelationships. I mean, there's certain things where you just have to say it's beyond your knowledge. I mean, why somebody's brother would invite someone who was involved in the dog fighting ring? I don't know. Maybe it's just partly because they went way, way back. You know, they were old friends. It's just, and again, if you think back, by the way, Marcus Vick, as opposed to Michael Vick, had a more unsavory reputation than Michael Vick, you know, up at least until the dogfighting ring, and so everyone kind of forgot about Marcus Vick at that point. But, you know, it may well be that Marcus Vick's judgment is a lot worse than Michael. And plus, you know, if you want to believe that Michael learned some lessons because he went to jail, and there's probably some truth to that, and some regret, that doesn't carry over to Marcus. So maybe the answer is next time, Michael, you know, just don't have your brother plan your party, plan it yourself.
But as you mentioned, Roger Goodell tends to have his own kind of system of justice, so who knows how this is going to play.
Yeah, he may really look askance at this. What I was saying before, and I said, you know, it may not be that big a deal, I was thinking more in terms of strictly legal terms, yeah, you know, violating the terms of his supervised release. But with respect to, you know, NFL justice, that may be a real problem.
Oh, my God. And we haven't even talked about the president of the Detroit Lions.
Who was so
inebriated that
he couldn't touch his nose.
He couldn't touch his nose. Although Luand, what's this guy's first name here? Tom Luand. Although he was, I just love reading these reports. Although he was frequently speechless and often appeared to be baffled by simple questions in a police video of his arrest, he managed to tell the police that he had not had a drink in 18 months.
Yeah, I guess he was so drunk that he didn't realize he was drunk. I am kind of amazed actually that William Clay Ford leapt to his defense so quickly, because it's one thing to be drunk. It's another thing to be driving drunk. That's where you're doing something that really endangers other people. And I mean, that is a lot worse than a lot of the things that, you know, these people that we've been talking about get charged with. When you go out there and you're twice the legal limit driving around, you're a risk to people. And you know, it's kind of ironic that, you know, William Clay Ford, you know, from the Carr family would not have that big of a problem with a guy driving around really, really drunk, and also running a team.
He is, by the way, the ninth NFL employee to be arrested for DUI in 2010. You know, and again, I know this is old news to people, but there really is. I mean, maybe there's a cultural issue here that it's just never going to go away, and all you can do is hope to contain it.
Yeah, I mean, what culture is it? Sports? I mean, I'm just not quite sure how to what we're talking about here. Yeah. I guess all these people just have sports in common, but it's hard to understand what they all really have in common as people. It's perplexing.
Yeah, well, and I don't think football's the only one. And on the DUI side, I mean, we've seen it in all the sports.
So. Not as much as football. I'll tell you what, the NFL's got. You can sit down and draw
a list.
Hockey's
got a history.
The NFL in 1 week destroys any other league for legal problems. In 1 week.
I was thinking more of the DUI issue.
Anything. DUI, anything. Anyhow. Mr. Becker.
Sir.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Have a swell time in New York.
Yeah,
you're just down the street from the NHL offices, and if they're spending all that money on legal fees, surely they'd send you some your way.
And Gary Bettman made $7 million, so he's got some money. That
well, you
can
give him a call for me then.
We'll do
Look,
that.
You just have to walk up the street.
That's Rob Becker. Thank you very much, Mr. Becker. That's Rob Becker, our legal analyst. I love the Decream models. I'm sorry. That's so spectacular. When we come back...
Some people have a jumping castle for their birthday.
Yeah. Some have the Decream models. When we come back, Kevin McCabe of Fox Sportsnet joins us to talk about the Phoenix Suns, the Toronto Raptors, and Brian Colangelo. This is Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
We are back for Primetime Sports on July 12, 2010. This is Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown, joined by James Deacon, my co-host. Mr. McCown will be back next week. And, well, we already looked at the Decrem models just to do some research.
They appear to be quite accomplished.
They do. Models that were at Michael Vick's party.
Who didn't get shot?
Who didn't get shot? Oh, that's true. We are pleased at this time to be joined by Kevin McCabe of Fox Sportsnet in lovely Arizona. Mr. McCabe.
Yeah.
My condolences, by the way, on Hito Turkoglu, if it comes about.
I don't know. First off, don't call me Mr. I was looking around the room to see if my dad was here or something. It's Kevin. He just wants out of that... Once I have that Canadian lifestyle, come down here and live in the sun. He's better in the Sun Belt, so we'll see what happens.
For those of you who do not know, we're talking about a reported deal, and we're waiting for it to be finalized. But essentially, the Raptors, when it's all said and done, would send Hito Turkoglu and Reggie Evans and Jose Calderon. Evans and Calderon would go to Charlotte. And in return, the Raptors would end up with Leandro Barbosa, forward Dwayne Jones. The Raptors would also end up getting Boris Diaw and Tyson Chandler and not have to use their trade exception, which is significant because even with all these moves, the Raptors clearly have another one or two moves to make, and $14.5 million could certainly come in handy. Can you tell us a bit about Barbosa especially?
Well, I think he kind of really maxed out this last year, and there's a lot of air of uncertainty about his play. You know, he grew up here in the Phoenix system, came in. I never believed in him. I thought, oh, my God, this is it. But he had developed into a nice player. He was built on speed. And then this last year, he just really kind of lost his step. He really didn't have that great first step to the basket where guys were getting to him. He's an okay shooter, shoots a real knuckleball like Sean Marion likes to throw up. But it still goes in, so that's pretty good. But he had a rough year. Physically, he hurt his wrist. And that may have had something to do with the shooting going down. He also lost his mother last year, and they were very close. You know, here's a guy coming to another country, barely spoke any English at all when he got here. And she came with him. They're a very tight-knit family, lost his mother. So he had a rough year personally, and it kind of played out physically as well. So he's a nice player. I just don't know if it wore on him. They just weren't getting the player they used to have.
Kevin, you know, there's obviously some personnel changes going on with in Phoenix already. How do you see a guy like Turkoglu fitting in? Clearly there was some unhappiness with him in Toronto. Is this one of those situations where the people there figure they know how to make this guy work for his $10 million a year?
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. If they can get even a fraction of the player that he was in Orlando, then they'll love it because he'll be able to spread the floor and shoot a little bit. But
yeah.
I don't know if you guys, once he got that check, and I don't know if you guys paid him in Canadian money and all those different color dollar bills, that may be confused.
It still spends pretty well.
That's what I hear. You can still buy Molson's and hit the ladies' clubs or the jiggle joints, we like to call them.
Yeah, well, no NBA player in his right mind would do that.
No, that's never happened.
No, on that, nor carry a gun we can go down any list we want.
But I mean,
I'm just real interested to see because I know his numbers dropped off drastically, but you look at anybody, and this is what Hakeem Warrick is saying as he's joined this team. You play with Steve Nash, and there's your game will be elevated, and I think his game will be suited better when he gets to freelance a little bit more. So I'm hoping, and again, that's they lost Amari Stoudemire to the New York Knicks and lost him to the big money, but to completely rebuild, and they've retooled a nice way, and I think it's a nice piece. I don't think they're relying on him to be a superstar, but if they can get just maybe 75% of what he was in Orlando, I think people will be happy.
I guess the question, when he was here, he made it pretty clear on several occasions that he didn't think he was getting enough touches. But the one thing, not just he, everybody in the Raptors, this was not a very good backcourt. And I think there were a lot of issues with that. And I've got to think the way Nash runs things, the way things flow through him, and his awareness of the court and his sense of spacing and all that, I've got to think that it might just be the perfect fit for Hito Turkoglu in a lot of ways.
Well, and every player will tell you that, too, because, Steve is so unselfish. If he has to score, he will. He doesn't want to. And he's got Jason Richardson, who finally figured out his role last year, late in the year, realized that it had to be a three-headed monster with Amari Stoudemire. Now Amari's gone. There's a bunch of touches that are going to be available. Again, they've got Grant Hill, who's a guy who's perfect NBA player. He'll do whatever it takes, and he really has adopted that mentality. The past couple of years have been healthy. And I got a bunch of guys, Channing Frye, who's kind of, you know, blew up a little bit this year under the system with Steve Nash and got paid for it. Hakeem Warwick, who's going to be a slasher, a guy who plays without any kind of half-court run. And then you got Robin Lopez, who is not an offensive player at all as your center. So I think, you know, it's going to be perfect. He'll get more touches. There'll be less complaints. I know he likes to shoot, and if he can shoot at a high percentage, at, you know, 48-50%, then it'll be a great deal. And certainly with Leandro Barbosa, he really has fallen out of favor with Goran Dragic, the point guard, who's kind of stepped up his game. You know, he just becomes the lost soldier coming off the bench.
Kevin, thank you very much for joining us, and enjoy Mr. Turkoglu.
Hey, my best to you guys. Take care of Brian Colangelo. He's a good friend, dear friend, and a great basketball mind. Don't doubt him. Don't doubt Brian.
No, keep the faith, in other words.
All right, yep.
Thanks. Not likely with me anyhow, but that's besides the point. That was Kevin McCabe of Fox Sportsnet, and this is Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
We are back for the stretch drive in Primetime Sports for July 12th. Parting shots.
My shout out is for Paul Guidos.
Who?
A complete unknown on the, well, not a complete unknown, but a guy who's had a pretty journeyman career on the PGA Tour.
Oh, I knew it'd be golf.
You know, but he, you know, the other day, in the opening round, he shot 59. Now, this has only been done three previous times in the history of the PGA Tour. You know, so it's nice for a guy who's not really, you know, who's not a Tiger Woods, not a big superstar, to finally achieve a little history and go.
Yeah. Yeehaw.
I know. You're fascinated by this.
I am indeed. But thank you anyhow for your contribution. For James Deacon, this is Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for being with Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.